to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's two again. We do. They really have such an impact on our life. But we're going to wander off into some other subjects. Meanwhile, however, yesterday I was talking about the Dow Industrials just soaring into the stratosphere, leaping across tall buildings with a single bound, able to bend steel in it. Well, you know what I mean. And I commented that we should not expect to see this surge continue because this was the exuberance of people buying into the stock market to grab up the stock of companies that are about to be showered with taxpayer dollars as part of these ongoing ad infinitum bailout programs. And I said, in the context of the current economic management of the United States, we have this situation where the Dow is less a measure of our economic health and more like a gas gauge of tax money flowing into the to the various strapped institutions of the United States, Wall Street, and investment banks, and so forth. So anyway, common sense and reason seem to have settled in today because the Dow started its path back down and ended 115 points down. Meanwhile, we're having these congressional hearings, and they're grilling Geithner, and nowhere near as much as he deserves, I don't think. And I was watching the hearings this morning, and the new buzzword or buzz phrase, if you will, is contractual obligations. We need the money and we need to give it away because of contractual obligations. Ooh, all bow and worship the contractual obligations. It's like the way they're using the phrase, it's almost like a religious observance. Like contractual obligation is way beyond anybody should question. Oh, yes, we must make sure the contractual obligations are met. Okay, well, now, I keep my contractual obligations. And I am convinced, because of the high quality of listeners we have tuning into this show, that you keep your contractual obligations. But I don't expect you to come in to my company and keep my contractual obligations for me. Nor would I respond very favorably to being asked to come into your company and keep your contractual obligations. So here's my problem. First of all, how would AIG be handling their contractual obligations if there had not been a taxpayer bailout? They'd have to say, we can't keep them. We have to scale back. We have to settle for pennies on the dollar. We have to do this. We have to do that. Like a normal business. Why is the United States government in any way obligated to deal with the contractual obligations of a private company? And they're continuing to use the phrase orderly unwinding, which means what we're talking about here is not subprime mortgage-backed securities. We're talking about the derivatives, the credit default swaps. Now, AIG offered this product of their own free will. The counterparties bought it of their own free will. Obviously, in hindsight, it was a very bad business product, and it was a very bad decision. Why is the U.S. government getting involved? That's not the role of the government to get in and tinker with private business. Government's supposed to keep their hands off. And more to the point, if the U.S. government feels they must come in and intervene somehow, why is the taxpayer obligated to pay for it? I went through the Constitution again last night. And the Constitution, I mean, you want to talk about a contract and contractual obligations. The U.S. government is contractually obligated to we the people. Because that Constitution, that is the original contract with America. And I find it almost hypocritical that the same government that is just totally ignoring the Bill of Rights right now is going to hold up the contractual obligations of a private corporation as somehow holy and sacrosanct. We should not even dare to question the contractual obligations of AIG to their counterparties. Meanwhile, the Constitution is a blankety-blank piece of paper, according to George W. Bush, and certainly Barack Obama does not seem to be showing any strong inclination to reasserting the contractual obligations of the Bill of Rights. His national service program is a clear violation of the 13th Amendment, and his continuing support for the torture of certain prisoners and the holding of them without due process is a violation of a couple of other amendments. So on the one hand, the government is saying to the people, we have no obligation to keep our contractual agreements with the people through the Constitution, but we must help AIG keep their contractual obligations, and we are going to force you, the people, to pay for it. And you know something? Thinking about it, taking your money without due process and giving it to a private company, in other words, forcing you to work for them. We're all being turned into AIG employees with this maneuver. That's involuntary servitude. That also is unconstitutional. I would really like some public service lawyer. Boy, this is one of those rare occasions when I almost wish I'd gone to law school. I would love some public service lawyer to go to court and say that the bailouts of these private corporations at taxpayer expense represent involuntary servitude and therefore are unconstitutional. Boy, that's a good idea. I think we ought to all call our Congress critters and our newspapers and say, forcing us to work for these private corporations to pull them out of their mistakes, that's involuntary servitude. That's slavery. We have a black president who has brought back the institution of slavery to the United States. We are being enslaved, or indentured, if you prefer, to AIG. Wow, what a concept. It's just amazing. I mean, everything they talked about today was, oh, we've got to honor AIG's contractual obligations. That's AIG's problem. It's not my problem. I've got my own problems to solve. You've got your own problems to solve. Why are our lives and our needs for bailout subordinate to the interests of a corporation, which is a person only legally and doesn't really exist? It's a fictional human being. We're real human beings. We're flesh and blood. We should automatically be more important than the legal fiction of a corporation. And yet we are being enslaved to one. Now, Geithner, when he's up there, he's going back and forth talking about we need an overhaul of our financial regulations, and we need a more stable system with government regulatory structure. We had one, guys. After the last big economic kaboinga, we had a bunch of laws, including Glass-Steagall, and the United States Congress repealed all of that regulatory structure back in 1999. John McCain was one of the people leading the cheering for deregulation. The markets will manage themselves. They sure did. We're looking at the wreckage right now. They sailed right on out there and rammed the Titanic right into the iceberg. And it's down by the bow taking on water, and they're looking around saying, bail us out, bail us out. We didn't mean to do this. Yeah, well, you know. I think AIG should be allowed to collapse. I think General Motors and Chrysler and Ford should be allowed to collapse. Like any other evolutionary biologist, it's time for the dinosaurs to go extinct to make way for something newer, better, more efficient, more profitable. We are literally sacrificing our future generations to prop up a dying past. That is a very backward-looking philosophy by our government. It's counterproductive. That, to me, is the clearest single sign that the United States is a nation in decline. We're not going to get back the nation that we had before. We're on our way to extinction because that is the direction our government is pointing us. Now, looking at some of the more interesting indicators, you know, we have all these numbers we look at, Forex, Dow, NASDAQ, all these things. There's another one called CapEx, and it stands for the Capital Equipment Index. And what that means, capital equipment are the big, large, expensive, heavy machines that somebody buys when they are going to start a company that makes something, whether it's the robots on the car assembly line, or the punch presses, or the drill presses, or the drop forwards, or all of that stuff. Financing for this capital equipment has tumbled for the seventh straight month. And what that means is people aren't looking to bring back factories and manufacturing. It's slowing down even faster. Nobody wants to bother making things anymore. They're still in love with this idea that if they just coast along, the money will heal itself and all will be well. It's utter nonsense. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. The panic definitely is on here, and a lot of people are getting very upset. I'm reading our little chat room, and one of our visitors from Australia is saying that the Australian media right now is filled with all kinds of news stories about how angry the American people are getting. And I'm glad it's being noticed, because we are getting angry, and it seems to be noticed pretty much all around the world. The only place it's not being noticed is apparently Washington, D.C., which brings me to a topic I wanted to mention. I'm beginning to get the sense that Barack Obama is seriously out of touch with the American mainstream right now. And I began to wonder, back when he was talking about forcing soldiers who were serving in our various and sundry wars and invasions and conquests around the world, he was talking about forcing them to buy their own health insurance to pay for their combat injuries. And it's an absurd suggestion. First of all, that they could even afford such insurance on the little amount of money that we pay them as it is. And this idea that somehow the government should be indemnified for having to take care of these people who are being crippled and maimed and wounded in service to the country. Now, under public outcry, they've apparently backed off this plan, which is good. You know, wow, finally some sense is showing through. But the fact that he originally thought that this might actually fly with the American people, I think betrays a dangerous lack of connection. And I know Barack Obama is a great salesman, and he gets up there, and he looks well, and he speaks well, and you make a great TV game show host, and maybe somewhere after he's out of the White House, we can have him host the Miss America pageant or something. But he is starting to strike me as somebody who is really almost blind to what the American people are thinking and feeling right now. And it may be because, obviously, as the president, he is on top of this huge pyramid of middle manager and advisor this and counsel that and focus group this and all the rest of it. And all those people are lying because they want things to look really, really good so that they look good to their superior. And if you're piled up on too many of these obfuscating layers, you may be very much out of touch with what's going on. Now, this gets back to the legend of King Arthur, which, like most legends, is actually an amalgam of several real people and several fictional people and several concepts. And I like to go back to the idea of Merlin the Magician, who's a character in the Arthurian legends I tend to identify with most. Merlin had one special property that was of benefit to Arthur and had nothing to do with waving his magic wand. Merlin was the one person that had direct access to the king, who could also go out and wander through all the other social levels of the kingdom. People didn't consider it unusual to see Merlin wandering around the countryside and going into villages. They might have been distrustful of him because he was a magician. But there was no social stigma. There was no class stigma. And so Merlin was the one person who knew what all levels of the society were thinking and feeling and could communicate that to King Arthur. Now, to bring it back to the present day, it is obvious that Obama doesn't have a similar facility. He is relying on his inner circle of advisors to tell him what the world is thinking and feeling and reacting to right now. And because of that, we're starting to see these choices and decisions that Obama is making that are certainly serving the interests of a lot of, you know, private, very wealthy, and very powerful individuals within our society, but seems contrary to the welfare of the common people. And I think when you have a leader who is that clearly out of touch with what's going on, that's a dangerous situation, because that's a person who can make the big, ugly mistake that triggers a violent uprising. And obviously, there's some concern there. Now, like I said, the mere fact that he thought he was going to be able to sell this idea of making soldiers buy their own health insurance for their war injuries, That is a red warning sign. I know the corporate media just sort of blew over it, and it's a done deal, and it's gone. But it's a symptom, and you need to look at it as a symptom there. Now, getting back to the economy real quick, and I know we're almost through the show. And by the way, Matt is in the control room. He is lonely. He is waiting for your phone calls. If you want to join us on the air for the rest of the show, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Turning back to Swindler's List. We are beginning to hear from a lot of the people who invested with Bernie Madoff that they knew something was wrong with his operation. He was generating these unrealistically high returns. People who were running parallel trades to reverse engineer his strategy couldn't get it to work. And yet, when they saw the returns he was getting, and even though they assumed he was doing something shady, most of them thought he was doing a lot of insider trading, which is also illegal, I might add, they went and invested with him anyway because they wanted the returns, they wanted the profits, they wanted the money. And I don't think these people have realized they've just opened themselves up to a clawback. Because if they had reason to suspect that Bernie Madoff was engaging in some illegal activity, whether it was a pyramid scheme or insider trading or whatever it was, if they suspected it, then they are guilty of receiving stolen goods, and they can and should be forced to surrender those profits to give back to the victims who were burned when the whole system came apart. And I think we need to really, really look at that. Now, speaking of pyramid schemes, as you're all probably aware by now, I consider the entire Federal Reserve System a pyramid scheme because it only continues to work if there are always a much wider base of new borrowers coming in at the bottom to prop up the whole system. The problem with the debt-based, interest-bearing currency system is the instant it goes into operation, more money is owed than is actually in existence. And so the only way to keep it going is you got to find new borrowers. You got to have more children, every generation, many more. They've got to be lured in and sucked in, whether it's student loans or car loans or credit cards or whatever. Got to get them on that credit hook. Because only when money is borrowed can money be created. And so they need the new borrowers to create the money with which to pay off the old loans. And that's how the economy moves forward. And they, when they talk about growing the economy, that's what they're talking about, finding new borrowers to come into the system to allow the creation of more money. Sooner or later, you run out of those new borrowers. I mean, it's a finite planet. There's only so many billion people on the planet. You're going to run out of borrowers eventually. And that's what's happened basically last year. We don't really have a credit crisis in the banks. There's a lot of money out there. I'm getting credit card applications every day, which go right in the shredder. The problem is that people like myself, we're short of cash, and we don't want to borrow anymore because we don't know we're going to be able to pay it off, unlike the U.S. government. So it's really a big pyramid scheme and has been all along, and it's in danger. Now, this gets us to Ron Paul's House Resolution 1207. This is a bill which, if passed, will force an audit of the Federal Reserve. Remember, the Federal Reserve is a private banking company. It is, in theory, subject to the same bank regulations as any other bank in the United States, but it has never been audited. Not once in its entire history since 1913. Ron Paul's bill has 42 co-sponsors. I'm proud to say that my representative, Neil Abercrombie, is one of them. And hopefully it will be passed, and hopefully it will be signed. I'm not holding my breath, but it's going to be interesting to see how Obama and his people weasel out of this one. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. 800-259-9231. Call in. We'll talk.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just try it yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. And boy, every time I listen to that song, it's just really amazing. And the problem here is in our country, because we make so little, we try and keep everybody employed by putting services on top of services. It's like there's the person who will make a product, and then there's like 10 layers of people who put stickers on it and inspect it and approve it and resell it and move it around. But by the time it finally gets to the store and gets into your hand, something that would cost originally 50 cents to make is now $7. and everybody's paying taxes along the way, and it's just huge. Okay, we've got callers coming onto the line, and all right, I'm going to take the callers now. I've got one of the story. The chat room people have been requesting I cover this story. I think we'll do that in the last segment of our show today. So we're going to go to the phones. Scott in Pennsylvania. Aloha, Scott. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the domestic draft bill that was passed last night.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bill that basically says that young people, old people from all different age groups are going to have to volunteer for service under the Obama administration. I wanted to know if you think that people are going to go along with that, if it's going to be phased in. So it makes it seem like it's fun, and then eventually people are just going to, you know, think it's all right, you know, to have your son or daughter or, you know, your grandmother, you know, serve hours that they wouldn't have to, 10 or 20 years before. Kind of like how they phased in the income tax. It was a very mm-hmm. low amount, you know.
Let me tell you what I feel about this National Service Act. Okay, I'm adamantly opposed to it on a wide variety of levels. First of all, if it's mandatory, then they should take the word volunteer out of it. That word volunteer is in there to conceal the fact that this is enforced enslavement. And it is a violation of the 13th Amendment. They're going to try and say, oh, this is volunteerism. We're requiring you to volunteer, but since you're a volunteer, we can get around the 13th Amendment that way. They do the same kind of sleazy trick with the draft for the military, which is technically a violation of the 13th Amendment as well. The second reason I'm opposed to this National Service Act is all the things they're going to get people to come in and volunteer to do are things that we're supposed to be paying taxes for. But we're not going to see a reduction in our tax bills by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, tax bills are going up. We just got notified here in Hawaii that all the tax rates are being boosted because, you know, yes, everybody's out of work and losing their home, but heaven forbid the legislators should have to go without their paychecks and their budgets and stuff. So at a time when we cannot even afford to pay the taxes we've already got, they're talking about raising the taxes again. And the way they're going to save money is they're going to say, oh, well, we don't need to clean the streets anymore. We've got the volunteers to do it. We don't need to patch the roads anymore. We've got the volunteers to do it. We don't need to hire daycare center staffers to keep an eye on the kids. We've got the volunteers to do it. In other words, they're going to tax you to run the government, and then they're going to make you do the government's job at a lot of different levels.
So do you think that they're doing all this crazy stuff, raising taxes, having mandatory service, to get a group of people that they can throw into FEMA camps, that they can lock away in jails and say, you know, look, those are the bad people. You know, you good people who are volunteering are, you know, keeping this nation alive and paying your taxes. I think that they're going to use these crazy agendas, you know, as an excuse for, you know, lockdown.
No, I think they're preparing for massive public uprisings because they realize how close we are to a revolution. I don't think they want to do it. It costs money to keep people, even in the FEMA camps. You got to feed them, you got to clothe them, you got to provide at least some basic necessities like water to them. The ultimate goal of any government is to get the most work product out of the population while having to provide the least amount of life support to them in exchange for that work. So the camps there are there as a contingency plan. But I think the idea, first of all, they're raising taxes and they're grabbing all the money they can to give to their corporations because the country has gone broke. The U.S. government has borrowed us into a black hole of debt we can never really get out. They're trying to basically turn us all into debt slaves and say, well, it's for the good of the nation, you know, that we have to raise taxes to 70-80% and just grit your teeth and we'll get through it, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, in order to have more money to give to the AIGs and the Goldman Sachs and the rest of it, they're cutting government services and they're trying to ignite this new volunteer corps to come in and do the services that we used to get for the taxes we paid. So we're in this very awkward situation where we're paying some of the highest taxes on the planet and we're getting almost nothing back for it for ourselves. I mean, if you go to other countries, they pay high taxes too, but they get free medical care there. They get really good education. They get, you know, free college education. I mean, if you look around the rest of the world to these other countries that aren't hideously in debt and aren't blowing every spare cent on things that go bang, on top of brown people, yes, they have high taxes, roughly equal to what we're paying, but the populations are getting stuff back for it. So we've kind of got the worst of both possible worlds. We've got the high taxes that you would see in a socialist environment, and we've got nothing coming back from the government, which is the ideal of capitalism. And so it really is, it's the worst of it's the worst of both worlds.
So do you think that the Obama administration is purposely out of step to cause mass uprisings and that they're, you know, looking for a revolt? Or do you think that they're just, you know, hoping that people go along with their plan and pay their taxes and serve their service? And,
I think they're out of touch. I think they're clueless and they're out of touch. And like I said earlier in the show, this situation where Obama really thought we were going to go for having the soldiers buy their own health insurance for their war wounds shows that he's not connected with what we're feeling out here. And unfortunately, we've got a government that is filled with very, very rich people to where they actually don't understand what it's like to be sleeping in your car at night, even though you're working a 40-hour-a-week job just to make ends meet. They don't get it. They don't see it. They're oblivious to it. And, yeah, I think we're heading toward a revolt, and I know that they think we're heading toward a revolt, but I'm sure that they're hoping we'll just grin and bear it and go back to work and pay our taxes. And I think that's one of the big reasons they're trying to start a war someplace, because they're going to go back to all the earlier wars in our history where the American people were willing to endure a tremendous amount of hardship. Because it was a war and the life of the nation was at stake. But it's a very different reality here right now. And a lot of the people in the high reaches of power in our government, like Dr. Kissinger, they don't get it. They don't comprehend how the population has changed because the information flow has changed because of the blogs, because of the alternative media, because of the Internet. They know it's a problem. We had the Rockefellers come out yesterday and say the Internet is a big threat. Now, they're trying to say it's because the Internet can be attacked by terrorists and stuff, but that's just a cover story. Their real concern is that if they can't lie to us effectively, then they can't rule us anymore. And that is the real issue. We are not rulable anymore.
Yep, thank you.
All right, well, thank you for the call, Scott. We're going to switch over to Bill in Austin, Texas. Aloha, Bill. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? What? Okay, all right. Bill apparently dropped. I'm sorry, Bill, if I bored you to that stage where you dropped it. But, yeah, it is a major situation where we have people who are, and we talk about the front people, like the elected officials like Pelosi and Obama and whatnot. And we know that behind them there are people of incredible wealth and power who are pulling the strings. And the problem is, because we don't know who these people are, we don't know what their beliefs are, we don't know what their perceptions are, and worse, we don't know how connected to the real world they are. They can be just as isolated from the real world in their ivory towers as anybody else. And we've had people get up there and talk about, well, John McCain doesn't use computers. They talk about the internets. They talk about the tubes. They really don't understand what the internet and the blogosphere is all about, let alone its sociological impact. And again, the model I like to go back to using is look at what happened to world history and politics after Gutenberg invented movable type printing. And there you will find the template for what we're going through right here and right now. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the commercials, we're going to talk about cold fusion. This is something I was asked to talk about today. Happy to talk about it. Some new developments there. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors. And Aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. The phones are lighting up. Before we get to the calls, though, I wanted to cover this real quickly. A story has come out from some researchers with the United States Navy that they have conducted their own variation of what is called the cold fusion experiment, and they have detected free neutrons coming out of the reaction. This is an indicator that nuclear reactions are, in fact, taking place inside the experiment. Now, the reason this is controversial, many, many years ago, two scientists, Pons and Fleischmann, announced that they had succeeded in creating small-scale nuclear fusion within a very small laboratory apparatus. It was called cold fusion because it did not require the extremely high temperatures and energies that are normally associated with fusion reactions, such as, in the case of a bomb, a fission bomb used to set it off, and various other experiments involving huge lasers and magnetic bottles and the tokamak reactor. And the idea is basically that the current hot fusion approaches are like trying to drive a tack into the roof of a cathedral by holding some spaghetti up there and balancing it in just the right way to get it straight to where you can push the tack in, as opposed to getting up there with a little tiny tack hammer and just whacking it in. And just in theory, the idea is that if you have a molecular lattice that is rigid enough, and using electrolysis, you're able to drag hydrogen atoms into this lattice, and then the lattice pushes them together enough to fuse, then you get helium, you get an energy output, and basically it's this little electrolytic cell with deuterium hydrogen, and they're experimenting with different types of metals and different types of chemicals, platinum and palladium and electropolishing and a lot of other techniques like that. And the idea is that you will put electricity in, but you will get more heat out than the electricity alone can account for, and that at some point enough heat will be generated where that heat can be used to provide the electricity back to the cell, and there will be a surplus that can be used to generate power for your electric razor or your iPod or whatever you're going to be doing there. Now, as soon as this technology was announced by Pons and Fleischmann, there was an anonymous consortium who bought the patent. These guys were issued a patent on it. There was a huge endowment to the university, and then all of a sudden it kind of went away. And we started seeing over the years all these articles saying, oh, it's nonsense, couldn't possibly work, couldn't do this, couldn't do that. And yet every so often we find from the researchers who are continuing to look at this, there is another breakthrough that suggests there is really something there. Now, it has been a while since I've had my own physics lab here at home. In fact, it was high school, if I recall correctly. And so I have not had a chance to play with this myself. And so I don't honestly know if there is a there. But I do know this. Looking back on the history of the corporations and the U.S. government over the last several years, we know that if small-scale cold fusion were to become or were to be proven to be a reality, and it is so simple that anybody could build it, I mean, think of all the corporations who would be literally at death's door from that. Oil would no longer be needed as a fuel. It would still be needed as a precursor to plastic manufacturing and as lubricants, but the entire fuel industry, diesel fuel, racing fuel, car fuel, would pretty much be gone. Large centralized corporate electric power plants would no longer be necessary with the huge profit or loss that comes from those. You wouldn't need high-tension wires across the country. Every home would have its own independent power supply. You'd have electric cars that never needed to be recharged. You just put in some more deuterium hydrogen every once in a while, and they would just run. I mean, the entire world as we know it would change. But there are so many vested interests and corporations who would be threatened by this. You have to look at the possibility that the huge PR campaign that we see, every time somebody says there's been a breakthrough on cold fusion, you get all of this ridiculing press saying, oh, there's nothing there, it's nonsense, they're bozos, and they, you know, they equate them with the no Apollo moon landing crowd and probably with the no plane at the Pentagon crowd, and it just goes on and on and on. So, again, I don't know what's there or not. But I know it needs to be looked into, and that we should never allow anybody in the media or the government to dissuade us from finding out for ourselves. And that's all I want to say on that one right there. We're going to go to the phones. We have Brad in Kentucky. Aloha, Brad. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, I was going to talk about Barack Obama, but what you were talking about with the cold fusion reminded me of something else. Do you remember there were these Australian guys that invented some kind of motor, and it was used magnets, It was like once you started it, it just kept going. It was like, and they were supposed to reveal the technology like at several different places, and I haven't heard any more about it. That turned out to be a hoax.
Turned out to be a hoax.
That's what I figured.
And you know, there's always a little hidden power supply someplace, and you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch in physics.
Mm-hmm.
There's no perpetual motion machine. What the cold fusion is, it's a way of achieving a process that we know will produce energy from matter in accordance with Einstein. It's just a different way of achieving it without needing a huge infrastructure or a huge mechanical structure to support it. And that's its real attractiveness right there. And as I said, we keep hearing from numerous scientists around the world that they have duplicated the effect. They know something's going on there. They're not exactly sure what it is. May have been a big PR disaster to call it cold fusion to begin with. But like I said, this latest research results from these U.S. Navy scientists, they're claiming to have detected neutron radiation coming out of this thing. And that tells us that something is happening at the atomic level.
Yeah, well, I doubt it will ever become available for the average person to use.
Well, I disagree, because all somebody has to do is figure out how to make a reliable version of this cold fusion system and just post the blueprints on the Internet, and it is all over, because everybody will have it. From what I've read of the descriptions of these electrolytic cells, they're easy enough where anybody who's familiar with tools can make the things. It's not like we're talking about building a, you know, a particle collider or something. It's, you know, weekends work in the machine shop, and you've got something that's going to run your stereo for the rest of your life.
Well, I mean, if Obama really wants to turn our economy around, then, you know, why don't we start, you know, making stuff, you know, again?
I absolutely agree. You know,
we could use that technology to you know, start a whole new revolution, you know, as far as industrial, I mean.
Well, so the problem with theirs, as I mentioned before, it threatens too many existing industries. What we need to do is invent something that doesn't threaten anybody, like make the leap into optical computing in a big way. There's a lot of research has already been done. They've actually built a couple of prototypes on the thing. But if we could, like, lead the world into photonic circuitry, then we've got a new product. We can revive manufacturing. We can revive the economy. This is why I support funding NASA, not because I want to see our flag up there on the space station, or Stephen Colbert's name on the module there, but because I want to see that technological spin-off just jumpstart our economy and our industrial base the way it did back in the 1960s. We're out of time. We've got one more call. I need to switch over. So, Brad, thank you for the phone call and call in again. We're going to switch to Mike in Maryland. Oh, do we still have Brad? Oh, he lost you. Oh, okay, well, apparently Mike dropped as well, or maybe the mutant hamster's eating the phone lines again, so we lost him. Yeah, getting back to this situation, we're looking basically at two scenarios. We either have to save the United States economy, or we just have to let it go, or the U.S. is going to start a new world war, and we're going to lose that one anyway because we don't have the industrial base to sustain the kind of production it takes to win a war. But on that optimistic path that we could turn this country's economy around, the only way we're going to do it is to come up with some new technology and new products that nobody else is making. And we have to make that commitment to do that. We have lost our traditional manufacturing to other countries. We've been giving it away for 30 years. We're never going to get that back. We could spend the rest of our lives playing catch-up, trying to get that manufacturing back. And we won't, because these other countries, they got the lead. They're not going to let it go. They know they've got a good thing. They're making the products we're using the technologies, in many cases, we invented. So we have to come up with something brand new, whether it's cold fusion or whether it is photonic computing systems or who knows. Could be out there. You know, we haven't even thought of it yet. But we've got to think of something that the United States will make, that the rest of the world will want. And that's how we revive our industrial base and put people back to work and get the mortgages and credit cards paid off and buy that 65-inch plasma TV that we're all supposed to have in our home as our religious observance. Okay, that's it for today's show. We'll be back tomorrow, 5 p.m. Central Time, same time. Until then, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, drive very, very carefully, and aloha, America.